Aloha, everyone. Today we're going to have a podcast. I'm your host with Smart Living Hawaii. My name is Christina Laney Mitri, and we're going to discuss different topics with Eco Rotary. What our podcast focuses on is smart homes and technology, sustainability, healthy lifestyles, and smart business. And our Sustainable Leaders series is going to continue with Jacob Roberts. He is our Eco Rotary Club of Kaka'ako's current president. I am a past president a few years ago. And we're going to chat about how our Rotary Club is different from some of the other Rotary Clubs out there, the environmental impact that we do, and some cool volunteer projects that we work on here in Hawaii. So, aloha, Jacob.
Hi there.
So,
Thanks for
thanks
having
for
me.
joining us today. It's funny, I talk about Eco Rotary all the time in our podcasts whenever we're interviewing different people, but I haven't actually done a podcast on Eco Rotary, and I thought, well, I probably should. So, it is Earth Month, April. So, I thought this would be a good day to feature Eco Rotary and all that we're doing. A little bit on Jacob. I know this is on Eco Rotary, but I do want to give some info on him. He is our president, and he is definitely focused on the environment and making Hawaii sustainable. And so here's a little snippet on Jacob. He is a field sales consultant at Sunrun, specializing in helping homeowners transition to clean, affordable, and reliable energy sources. He emphasizes reducing carbon footprints and cutting electricity costs. His dedication to environmental preservation and sustainability is rooted in his academic background in marine biology and sustainable management. He has a bachelor's degree in marine biology from UC Santa Cruz and an MBA and MPA in sustainable management from Presidio Graduate School. His foremost objective, I guess, in life is to facilitate environmental rejuvenation within his lifetime, striving for the restoration of biodiversity and natural equilibrium in ecosystems. His approach centers on sustainable urban development, permaculture, renewable energy, and the soil food web. As a certified soil food web consultant, he collaborates with clients across various scales from residential gardens to expansive farms and urban environments in advancing sustainable practices. So he totally fits the mold to an Eco Rotary member. But within our club, we are more than open to bringing in anybody interested in supporting the environment in all of these capacities. So you don't have to be a Jacob to join our club. You just have to want to support it. Anyhow, so welcome. And let's start
Thank you.
with your background. Jacob, where are you from?
Sure, that's a good summary. I am from Tucson, Arizona. So I grew up in the desert, and I always think it's kind of funny. You read about people who are interested in the environment, environmental change makers, and they'll talk about their childhoods growing up playing in the streams and going in the mountains and forests and playing. And growing up in Tucson, it was always 100 plus degrees, and we never wanted to go outside. Spent all my childhood, anytime my dad would want to go on a hike, we would just like absolutely refuse. We did not want to be outside at all. So it wasn't until we actually traveled to Hawaii when I was a kid, when I was 7 years old, and we went to the coral reefs for the first time, and just snorkeling over the coral reefs, just seeing how much color and life and number of species. Like, I memorized the entire little laminated sheet of like what all the fish's names were. And I just got so it was just so amazing to see, like, this is what the world is capable of producing, coming from the desert where everything's gray and brown and
And not
mottled,
by the ocean.
not by the ocean. And then just seeing a coral reef for the first time was really eye-opening. So I wanted to get into marine biology, and I knew that from 7 years old. I wanted to be a marine biologist. And life happens. I ended up studying chemical engineering for 2 years at Oregon State before, getting really interested in the plastic pollution problem in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. So I became really interested in that and decided I did want to be a marine biologist after all. So I left Oregon State, went to UC Santa Cruz. Yeah, and that's I think really where my environmental passion stemmed from. Was just, I feel like you know about problems, you know that things are issues, but until you not just know about it, but you feel it emotionally, and then have the drive to actually do something for it, recognize that, if you care about something, you have to do it. You have to participate in the solution. That's really where that drive came from.
And then,
I
how did
spent
you end up Hawaii? How did you end up here?
So I spent some time with AmeriCorps doing conservation work all across California. After that, I went into grad school. I wanted an MBA, a business degree in sustainable management, really because I recognized that although I love the ocean and love being in the ocean, the solutions for protecting the ocean aren't really in the ocean. It's really in how we live as people in our societies and communities, how we use food, how we use energy, how we design our urban spaces and supply our own resources. So I got really interested in like what are the levers for change, both in the private sector, which is where the MBA came in, and then the public sector, which is the Master's of Public Administration as well. After that, I did a little bit of consulting work in Central Valley, California, looking at wastewater treatment technologies for drought resilience. And that was a 10-month program. After that, one of the alumni in my school, in my grad school, said that there was a job out here working on fishing boats. I'm like, okay, well, I haven't actually gotten to work in the field of marine biology yet. So I moved out here. I moved out here to be a fisheries observer. And a fisheries observer is the biologist on board fishing boats. They go out for about a month at a time and just see, watch, record data for what they're catching and how much bycatch they're pulling up. Are they doing everything they need to avoid catching seabirds and turtles and marine mammals? Did some
Are you
shark
on? Were you
again.
on? What kind of boats were you? Were they like, I know that there's a lot of boats, and then they have people from different countries in Asia on these boats that they cannot even get onto land. And
Yep, that's the ones.
I wouldn't say, so you like each of them have to agree to have someone like you on those boats? Is it kind of like to make sure they're following protocol and stuff as
So there are
well,
two
or?
fisheries in Hawaii, two like commercial fisheries. They're both longliners, which means that the way that they fish is a really long fishing line. It just kind of hangs out underneath the ocean with hooks dropping down from the line. So each of the hooks comes up one by one, so we can record every single fish that comes up on the line. But there's tuna fishery and then there's swordfish. So the tuna fishery, 20% of those boats have to have an observer on board. Swordfish,
It's
100% of
random, you mean, for
the boats.
them.
So they get, they get pulled randomly 20% of the time. They have to have a biologist.
Did
The
not know
swordfish
that.
ones, 100%, 100% of the boats have to have a fisheries observer. And the reason for that is because the time of day that they fish and the depth at which they fish, they're a lot more likely to catch birds, turtles, marine mammals when they're trying to go for swordfish than when they go for tuna.
Interesting. I did not know that. That's a good note. All right. And let's see. When you are not president or prior to being president, what did you do for fun?
Actually, one of our former presidents, Pili, during COVID, we got really into bicycling. That was kind of our COVID activity. So I got into bicycling. From there, started going to F45. So just, going to the gym, playing volleyball. I've been scuba diving probably 15 years now.
Awesome. Yeah, my dad grew up in Texas, same idea of like wanting to get to water. And so he's like a diver and all of that growing up. I mean, He's no never done that when he was in Texas, but then he got into a diving program in UC in Santa Barbara area. So that's his, and then ended up in Hawaii. So there's some similarity there. You're either
I've done
completely
diving in Santa Barbara.
deprived from the ocean and then like want to get to it, or you grew up with it and appreciate it in a different way, I guess. I don't know. It's
I was
interesting.
always amazed at how many dive shops there are in Tucson, Arizona.
Really?
I don't know where they all go. I don't know if they go down to Mexico, but there are a ton of dive shops in Tucson for some
Huh,
reason.
interesting. Well, back to Ikaroderik. I'm going to start off with the history. I think a lot of people, what I'm actually realizing, and you probably as well, is that a lot of people that have joined our club over the last, I think this is our 5th year now, with Ikaroderi, they're joining because they find us with some service project that we're doing or a volunteer opportunity that's dealing with the environment, or they find us on social media and then like they follow us and come to something. And they know nothing about Rotary. So I'm just going to take a quick minute to chat about Rotary International. And basically, it's a really large organization that is international. And it's across, I don't even know how many countries, but most countries in the world. And it's more like of a humanitarian volunteer service above self type of organization. It's not a real, there's no religion involved. It's more of just, you know, how can you support your community through volunteerism? And it's
Service above self.
older. Yeah. And service of self. So it's older of a nonprofit that's been around. It actually used to only be for, I think, men. And I can't remember what year, but women were allowed to be Rotarians is what they call it. And it was, I think, I would say up until now, there's a lot of baby boomers that are Rotarians and a lot of like from my our parents' generation that know Rotary, but it's not as well known with the younger generation. Like when I first started real estate, I remember Rotary and I just thought, oh, that's a whole bunch of old people. But that was like almost 20 years ago.
That's their
And so now, I guess 20 years later, people just don't even really know about Rotary from the generation that's a little bit under me. I mean, I'm in my 40s, so maybe the people in their 20s and 30s may not even know what Rotary is. So it is a very large, I think it's almost 1.5 million members across the world that are Rotarians. And there's a lot of opportunity for younger generations that are not necessarily Rotarians that are adults, but they have, you know, programs for high school students and intermediate. They also have college student opportunities, and they have their own, I would say, funding. So they have like billions of dollars that go into their international fund, and that makes it very attractive to where Rotary clubs can, you know, grow their money that they put into the club, and it'll bring back more money to them in the future. So this is interesting because most nonprofits, if you start one, you're having to go out and get your own grants, or you have to apply for money elsewhere, or you're getting donations. But through the international fund, like you're able to get global grants and you're able to get grant money for your club. And so there are 7 areas of focus that Rotary International has. And up until this last 5 years or so, it was only six. And just so to run off the areas of focus really quick, they are just, I have them here somewhere. There was peace building and conflict prevention, disease prevention and treatment, water sanitation and hygiene, maternal and child health, basic education and literacy, community economic development, and again, environment was just added. And so if you were to have like a project that you wanted to do as a club or globally, for a global fund, you could actually get funding in any of these areas of focus. So up until 5 years ago, there wasn't really any funds for environmental. And so once they started that, there were areas that were people that were very interested in sustainability and the environment, like a lot of us younger people. And then there became Eco Rotary clubs. So they were very specific to the environment, sustainability, climate action. And those clubs started populating. We were one of the first, I think maybe first as in like maybe the first five clubs that ever came about in Rotary International. And like we were so new that we actually have at Eco Rotary for our Instagram account. So there are now across the world, I think around 40 clubs that are Eco Rotary clubs. And we are working on our website. So we actually have ecorotary.org, but don't go there just yet.
I gotta
we
make a
are
website
changing over.
outside for
So
it's
we are working
construction
on
right now.
it. Yeah, in construction. But yeah, so we started this off and it's grown internationally. And there is even some clubs that are turning their clubs into eco clubs, like the one on Maui. They've been around for a very long time and then they wanted to become an eco club and hyper focus on the environment as well. So it's definitely growing, and what we're seeing, which is very neat, is a lot of younger generations are coming to our club because of the projects that we're offering. And so many of them don't know anything about Rotary. And if they did, they might have been at Interact at one point, or they've had some kind of student exchange, or they've been a part of, or their parents might have been a Rotarian. But other than that, most people
Scholarships.
don't know. Yeah. And so it's one of those things that, we really took off in COVID because we became an Eco Rotary Club before COVID. And then COVID hit. And so all of our service projects where Rotary normally did stuff like, working with the kupuna, the seniors, or working with kids in schools got all shut down. So a lot of the social services that the Rotarians were used to doing, we're not able to do during COVID. And then here we were doing outside work that became available that we were allowed to still do during COVID. And so that kind of blossomed into people wanting to get out of their homes and coming to these service projects and connecting with people and being able to do it and meet people and socialize where it was outdoors. And then that kind of turned into more projects where other Rotary clubs would like to do. So that's pretty much just kind of the synopsis of where our club came about. And now we're going to dive into talking to Jacob about our club and everything from all the service projects that we've done in the past. So up till now, take it away, Jacob.
Well, Christine was talking about kind of what happened during COVID, and we were still a new club then. We didn't have any major projects, just kind of small stuff. But we really had a goal from the very beginning to plant 10,000 trees. In fact, our first budget was pretty much there was nothing laid out for anything else. It was pretty low budget, except we had $100,000 set aside for planting trees. I'm thinking it was going to be $10 per tree. Fortunately, we were able to partner with Hwylaxey Reforestation Initiative at their Gunsock Ranch project, as well as Camilo Mora from UH Manoa, and they were able to provide all the trees that we planted. So at Gunsock Ranch, they're trying to put together a legacy forest, replanting a bunch of hardwood. So I think the year or two before we started working with them, they had a massive planting day, where they had thousands and thousands of trees, and thousands of volunteers came out, and they planted all these trees, put them in the ground, but because there's so many people, they weren't trained properly. A lot of them died. A lot of the trees died, and so there's still some when we got to it, but due to COVID, we could only have a limited number of people, and they had to be spread out, right? So it was a great project to kind of spread out over time. So every month we'd have volunteers, and we would collaborate. We would collaborate with other Rotary clubs and get them to bring volunteers as well. So it's a great way to sort of collaborate and network with other groups, bring them into the project so they could continue to do service while the lockdown was still happening. And then make sure that everybody was trained properly on how to plant the trees. And so it was a really, really successful project. So that was our first big one. We finally reached 10,000 trees just this last year. I believe it was in November.
That's
That was
great.
very exciting. And that's over the Gunstock Ranch project in La'ie, as well as Haleiwa Legacy Forest, which is a newer site that they started developing. That was our first big project. And then next, we started getting involved with the Genki Alawai project. And this is a program that has been highly publicized, largely due to the efforts that we did. So in 2019, EM Hawaii, which stands for Effective Microorganisms Hawaii, created the Genki Alawai project. And this is a project to trying to clean the Genki or trying to clean the Alawai Canal to make it fishable and swimmable by 2026. So in 2019, they started working with elementary schools in the area to create these Genki balls, which are little mud balls packed with microorganisms and molasses and rice bran. So you get the microorganisms food, sugars, carbs. They just grow to huge populations. So each little ball packed with organisms is tossed into the canal, sinks to the bottom, and eats away at all the sludge and all the other organic contents to break them down and prevent and oxygenate the canal.
So
So
we
it's
do have
been.
a podcast with Hiro, actually. So if you guys want to learn more and on the Genki Alawai project, you can go look for that podcast. But definitely just give a breakdown of it for sure right now so people know what it is, because we just did it.
We just did it on Saturday. It was our third annual Genki ball toss, and every year we try to give 5,000 Genki balls. Sometimes it depends on how large they make them. So this year we ended up with 4,338 because people were making the balls pretty large.
Yeah. So it's the same amount of content as 5,000
Same
balls.
stuff is going in. But yeah, so since we started doing that project, it's just been really incredible seeing the community outpour. There are now other organizations that have gotten involved. There are tons of Genki ball tosses throughout the year. But we still do. I th think there's one organization that did a larger one than us, but we do. Other than that one, I think we do the largest throughout the year.
Yeah. And then there's a lot of businesses now. I mean, the way we structure the Genki Alawai, I mean, like our fundraiser, we bring in sponsors from different businesses that are interested in this. Maybe you could just explain how, like the volunteer, how that works, because it's an interesting model that we have for the Genki fundraiser.
Yeah, what's great about it is we really wanted to create a fundraiser for our club, but we didn't want to just have, like a dinner or a gala or something, we wanted something that was actually helping the environment while we were raising funds. So that's why we got involved with Genki Alawai. Basically how we do it is there are 2 days. We have a making day, where, we get everybody to come together and make the Genki balls. And then 3 weeks later, after the balls have fermented and the populations of organisms has grown, we have another event where we toss them in. So that gives us two opportunities throughout the month to continue to raise funds. We also get corporate sponsors to help out with large donations to help support it. And the funds that we raise, a portion of it does go to the Genki Alawai project to support that project, but we also have a number of larger projects that we are also trying to raise funds for. I can get into those later. But yeah, so not only is it a fundraiser, but it's actually supporting the regeneration of the Alawai Canal. And One of the reasons that I like this project in particular is because, the Alloy Canal has had a bad reputation for decades, right? It's been closed down to public. But you talk to older people and they remember swimming in the canal. They remember going there as kids. They remember benches lined up all along the side of the canal and people were fishing off the benches. So, the Alloy Canal used to be such a powerful, or not, such a great center for
Community,
activity.
yeah.
Yeah, for community activity in the area. And it's just been kind of disregarded for so long. So, my thoughts are if this were just one big project, government did it, poured a bunch of Yankee balls in, like that could be done and it could be clean. But the fact that the community is actually participating and being involved means that they're going to be able to trust the canal when it is finally open. Right. I
Well,
think it's
just
important.
really, really quick, because I can't remember when I did the Genki podcast, but maybe talk about, because everybody asked, like, is it really doing anything, right? So maybe talk about some of the marine life that they're seeing now. For a lot of people, if you are listening in and you don't know anything about the Alawai Canal and you don't know Hawaii and Oahu, it's yeah, you it's they have flesh-eating bacteria thanks to cesspools that flow into the water and whatnot every day. But yeah, you can't go in the water, you can't swim in the water, you'll probably get staph infection if you had a cut, like pretty guaranteed. And the fish are not edible either. So, and there only been tilapia that I've seen growing up in that water. But if you want to share.
I mean the biggest thing that you notice kind of now that you go to the Alloy Canal is I think it's what's it called? I'm totally blanking on the name of the fish, but there's if you go there like shimmering along the surface, you'll
It's
see
mullet. I
like
think it's
huge
mullet.
school fish. Mullet, yes. I was thinking pollock. I knew it was two L's. Yeah, so mullet, huge mullet populations have come back. And that's kind of the base of the food chain there. So in the last 2 years, we've seen people have seen manta ray. A manta ray came into the canal. There was a baby hammerhead shark that came in. Monk seals have come in. There
Spotted
are more
eagle
sharks
rays.
coming in. Yeah, eagle rays, jellyfish. And with jellyfish, there was a big turtle that has been hanging out along the marina now. So that turtle comes in occasionally as well. What's exciting, Hiro showed me on Saturday, somebody has come across a little population of oysters. So if you don't know, oysters are filter feeders, and so they're really, really good at taking in water and cleaning it. So that's really an exciting development that oysters have now started to disperse and come into and settle down, settle on the in the canal. And if a good enough population of oysters comes in, it's going to start being able to clean itself. So that's going to be really great for like the continual management past 2026, where where we aim to make it fishable and swimmable.
But also the sludge, like, so they do some testings of the water and they do measure the sludge, like the depth of it, because I think it was like over 2 feet, right, when they started. And now I
Yeah,
don't remember how many inches is that now, but it's much lower. And some areas you're starting to see the sand at the bottom and you can see through the water. And then they are testing the fish as well, right? Like their flesh of the fish that that are in the water. It is not edible at this point from my understanding.
So
So.
there were certain points where the sludge was so high that the actual depth of the canal was only 2 inches in
Yeah,
certain areas.
that's gross.
So when we did our first one, our first Genki ball toss, they tested it before, it was at 23 inches. We did the toss, we tossed in 5,000 Genki balls. A month later, they came and tested it again. It was down to 5 inches.
Huge
So
difference. So,
huge, huge difference. I don't know of any of the more recent like sludge depth tests, but there are tons of areas in the canal that you can't see the sandy bottom. Surfrider does the Blue Water Task Force. They do samples kind of at the mouth of the canal at Magic Island. And over the last few years, it's gone from like 60 something percent of tests came back within healthy healthy limits to throughout 2023, of all the tests, 83% of tests came back within healthy limits.
Yeah. And for those of you who don't know, the Alawai Canal is a lot of like a lot of water source that comes from the mountains. It hits the other man-made canals and goes straight into the Alawai Canal and shoots into there, and that just dumps straight into the ocean. So our goal is not only, to think about what floats on the top of it, that goes out into the ocean, but just the cleanliness of water that's going into the ocean for the marine life. So that's where we kind of stepped in and helped on the actual water content. So it's
Yeah,
still pretty dirty
eventually.
with a lot coming on the, there's actual other people that work on capturing all that stuff before it goes into the ocean. So
Yeah.
props to all those people who do that.
Stormwater management is huge. Creating more permeable spaces, getting rid of concrete as much as possible so water can absorb into the ground before making it to the Alawai. All these are really important things for the health of the canal. That's in line with the Ahupua'a system, which is focusing on, the entire ecosystem all the way from the mountains to the sea.
Yeah. So, I know we took a lot of time on that one, but we did just finish that project, and we're looking forward to doing more things. And if anybody has questions specifically on the Genki, just reach out. We'll definitely connect you if you guys are thinking you want to do something like this with your company, or you can look at being a sponsor for next year for us.
Yeah, support us.
So jump into some other things, some other fun, maybe individual projects that we've worked on, so you guys can see some of the unique options than just cleaning a beach, right? That a lot of people hear about.
So most of our projects are more just volunteer work days. We go to a site, help them with weeding or planting. So we work with Ocean Friendly Garden. We have a partnership with Surf Rider, who manages the Ocean Friendly Garden in Kaka'ako. In the last year, we built and have started working on a thermal composting system for them. That's, taking food waste, other scraps. What I really want to focus on with compost is like rebuilding microorganisms communities, just like Genki Alawai does for the canal. We can start rebuilding microorganisms in the soil. We worked with Ko'olau Mountain Watershed Partnership, Manawili Heiau. We helped them build a little hale, so like stripping bark off of sticks to make a house, a hut. We worked with Loko Ia and Loko Ea fish ponds, Loko Ia in Kaneohe and Loko Ea in Hale'iwa. Twice a year, we work with Pearl Harbor on the Pearl Harbor bike path. And this was a massive area that was just, it was kind of used as a chop shop. And so the first year that we started working there, we removed 30 plus vehicles that were kind of going all the way back into the forest. And since then, we've just been, every time we go there, it's literal tons of waste that we pull out of there.
Yeah, so
So.
that runs on a 5 mile bike path that starts almost by like the stadium and then goes all the way down along the Pearl Harbor path. And so some of it does sit right on the water of Pearl Harbor, and some of it just kind of goes meandering on the path. There's a lot of homeless that have encampments there. Where we go and tackle is one of the worst places because it's abuts a junkyard. So that's why there's a lot of illegal activity that happens in that area, with the chop shop of cars and whatnot. So even HPD gets involved. We have a lot of community that jump in, and the city and county help run that. So we just have a small portion, and there's like maybe 30 different groups that help. And though it is coming up on April 20th, so if anybody's listening to this relatively from when I post it, you guys, if anybody's interested, you guys can come and join our club. We also have, I think, Polymomi's team, their green team. They're supposed to come and help volunteer with us as well. So anybody's welcome to join us. We never get all the trash out, to be honest. So
There's so
there, we
much
could
there.
always use more hands. That's all I have to say.
And that's really important just for creating a safe environment, a safe feeling for people that want to bike commute in Hawaii. With the public transit that just opened, with the Skyrail, there are more opportunities to get to where you're going besides driving in traffic. So, encouraging all these opportunities to bike commute or take public transit, I think is going to be huge for the island eventually. We also partnered with Parley. So we did a Christmas party in December, and that raised funds to buy trees and other plants for restoring Sandy Beach. And everybody loves Sandy Beach, but the hillside was just covered with invasives, so they removed those, and we replanted a bunch of native plants. We partnered with Pearl Haven, which is a home for young women who have been sex trafficked, to kind of have a place to recover and reintegrate into society. And they asked us to work on a food forest for them. And so we planted ulu trees. We helped them with learning how to do some composting with bokashi bins.
With the
And then
EM
we set up a
solution.
little, with the EM solution. And we built some planters for them to start growing their own food. A few years ago, we also did Ridge to Reef, which was kind of an Earth Day event. We got 30 different clubs to participate and do a beach cleanup. Or the idea is that it's not just beach cleanups, but it's you could take up hiking trails, you can take up urban areas, pretty much anywhere that you wanted to clean up. Just pick a spot, and then each club had to clean up that day. And that was also about trying to get data collection to see what people were cleaning up as well. You want me to keep going?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if any of the cool projects that people might be interested in, so you guys can join us. This is really the thing about our club is we aren't a club with lots of money, but we are a club with lots of care. So everybody here that joins is all really joining for volunteerism and helping out to help make Hawaii sustainable, more sustainable, whether it's with, food security type of things or food systems, or whether it's, cleaning up the environment, preservation, conservation type of work. So we do try to get creative and do more than just the typical beach cleanups like we were talking. I think most people like want to get out there. Like we work on taro patches, we do another project that we're going to be working on coming up. Maybe you can tell them a little bit more about the new Kaneohe Kauhale that the state put in for homelessness, and it's a residency for homeless people or soon to be homeless people that live kind of in the Kaneohe area, and what we're looking at partnering with Project Vision Hawaii with. Maybe you can share a little bit on that.
So Project Visions Hawaii came and spoke with us. I'm going to be posting it on our YouTube, the meeting that we had with him. And that is really kind of a from street to home pathway, right? So they take people just from like offering free showers, to then getting them into the tiny houses, to then getting them into two bedroom apartments, and then helping them jobs. So like kind of going from step zero all the way to where they can financially support themselves. So this site in Kaneohe, is kind of early in that pathway, getting people into just getting a roof over their head, getting them access to resources, getting them involved in a community. So I think it houses 36
32
people,
homes.
32
Yeah,
homes.
single people. Yeah.
So single resident homes. But along this site, there's this whole this large area of greenery that we've been invited to come and help out and see what we can do with planting a food forest, to provide one, a way for residents to be able to get their hands dirty, kind of get involved with supporting themselves through their own locally grown food. So I think we're going to be partnering with the Rotary Club of Kaneohe and maybe some other groups on getting a food forest up for them.
Yeah, and it also
Yeah.
sits right, it abuts a charter school, and that charter school doesn't actually have offer lunches. So they were really wanting to do some kind of food garden. So this would be the opportunity for the community to get more involved. There's a church down the way as well. It's right next to like the mental, like an institution there as well, and close to Woomer Community College. So there's a lot of different community groups that could be of service, I think, and it could be kind of like a community initiative that everybody can be involved with. But having our Eco Rotary Club help, get everything started, and someone like Jacob who can work on the soil, and then possibly like, where we're gonna put what type of plants and things like that. And it being like a food forest where we're growing trees, but then we're also, looking at the different kinds of food that will grow there. So that's kind of something that we're looking and excited to partner with. And I don't know, was there anything else that you wanted to share in regards to things that we're doing?
I mean, I'm happy to share. It's not something that we're doing yet, but since the wildfire in Lahaina, I've been trying to get a project going to really address the invasive grasses issue. So that got a lot of attention when the Lahaina wildfire happened, where a big reason why it spread so quickly was because 25% of Maui is covered in invasive guinea grass, California grass, all these invasive grasses that grow super fast, grow super tall, dry out, and then they become really easy fuel for fires. So through restorative soil management, I'm really hoping that we can move the systems beyond kind of the mid-succession grass level, and prepare the soil to be able to support more native forests through replantings as well. So there's one thing to plant trees, but if the soil isn't the microorganisms in the soil aren't able to support the tree, then it's just going to go back to, weeds, grasses, some of the basic stuff. So really starting at the soil level is, I think, how we're going to help move the land past kind of the degraded state that was put in, where
Like a
all
lot
the
of the
sugar
farmlands, yeah.
cane farmlands, sugarcane plantations. That soil really doesn't support much life at all. So the only thing it's going to grow is stuff like weeds and grasses that don't
Yeah.
put a lot of effort into their roots.
Yeah. And that just goes to show like our club, even though we're on Oahu, we do try to get out to a neighbor island throughout once a year and do like a service project and partner with clubs in on different islands, because we have, I think, 53 clubs statewide. I would say 30 something of them are on Oahu, but we do reach out to the other islands. So hopefully we'll be able to do one in Maui soon, and maybe the following year we could do one in Kauai, because we've done a couple on the Big Island. And those are always fun. It's a lot of good opportunity for us to all go as a club. And if you're one of our members, then we it's kind of it's a fun bonding time, and a like a weekend where you get away and get to go work out in on a different island, so, and get into some cool areas. So anyways.
So one thing, just kind of summarizing or bringing it all together is that we do a ton of projects. But any member who comes in, if they see a problem that they want to solve, Rotary is such a good avenue to do that. Like this grass project, this is just something that I came up with because I was learning about the soil food web and wanted to kind of incorporate that into our projects. If you see that there's a problem, join your club. You'll have access to not just our club's resources, to volunteers, to access to nonprofits in the area. You also have access to all the other Rotary clubs, both here in Hawaii. And if you want to get really ambitious, there are global grants that we can invite here and get support from clubs all over the world. So taking advantage of the Rotary network and all the resources that come with it is a really powerful thing. So it just feels good to be part of an organization where if I see a project that I want to do, I know that there's a way to get it done. Through Rotary. So Definitely, if that's something that sounds interesting to you, we'd love to have you join our club and bringing your ideas to the table.
Yeah. And then also, if you're not sure and you just want to volunteer and check us out, we do have meetings in the very the first Tuesday of the month at 6 o'clock, and we meet at Revolusan, which is right above Moku's in Salkakaako. And you can also jump online as well if you're hesitant to meet us in person at first. But it is a time where we meet in person, and we have a guest speaker, and it's always something based on the environmental scheme of things. And from there, you can also, at any time volunteer, invite friends to volunteer if you want to do it with a group. And if you really do enjoy our club or want to be a member, it's one of those things where like it is a volunteer opportunity. So we're not expecting everybody to be all in like a job. So it is a group that you could join, and we hope everybody gets involved. But we understand everybody's, I have two kids. Some people are getting their MBAs, and there's a lot that goes on. So we just welcome everybody to check us out, I would say.
Yeah. And unlike most Rotary clubs that are typically retirees with a lot of time and energy or resources on their hands, our club, because we're eco-focused, we tend to be kind of between our 20s to 40s. We have a few members outside of that. But this definitely isn't, your grandfather's Rotary Club. We're all relatively
We've
young
also
people.
restructured the financial dues and everything to be more accommodating as well, I would say.
Yeah, we do potlucks at our meetings instead of like $50 breakfasts. So
Yeah, so
it
whatever
makes it
we
more
can
accessible
do
for.
to definitely support those that maybe can't afford, bigger memberships. So yeah, that's the goal, is to get people in because they want to be involved with the work that we're doing. And anyhow, I think that pretty much wraps everything up. If there's anything else, oh, how can we reach you or reach the club? What's the best way to reach the club?
Best Way to Reach a Club is on Instagram. You can DM us. We're at Eco Rotary, ECOROTARY. Or our email is Eco Rotary Kakaako, all one word, no okina. Eco Rotary Kakaako at gmail.com.
And then you can also reach out to me at any time if any of you guys know me. I'm pretty connected, and I can get you connected with anybody from the club. But I think that's it. Thank you so much, Jacob, for jumping on. I'm glad that we can share a
Thanks
little
for
bit
seeing
more
us.
about Eco Rotary. But that's all I have for you today. Don't forget to also subscribe to our podcast. Check us out. Some of the things we were talking about, you probably find podcasts on them at www.smartlivinghawaii.org. And until next time, live smart. Mahalo, guys.
Mahalo.